Okay.
So my general impression is the climate is very good for me. Mm-hmm. But that's based on my own personal experience and what I've seen, which, and I just haven't seen any evidence of bad climate for women. And again, it could be just my own personal experience, or maybe I've got blinders on and not seeing things I ought to be seeing. And certainly there have been certain little things in my life here that were certainly discrimination, or not discrimination, but things that people said that they shouldn't have said or done. And I mean, things like, for example, when I was on the Physical Science Divisional Committee, I was the chair of a little subgroup who went off to interview the chairman of a science department on a tenure case. Mm-hmm. And I had two of my Mayo colleagues with me, and we introduced myself. I introduced myself as the chair of the subcommittee. And he immediately focused his attention on the two male colleagues. Mm-hmm. I mean, little things like that have happened, and then, you know, a bunch of other little, but none of those things that I would call just a major problem for climate.
Mm-hmm.
So, and tomorrow, it turns out, I'm going to be giving one of these follow-up interviews to Wisely, who's the Women in Science and Engineering program, and they have this big initiative on assessing climate for women, and I like to go to those things in order to give a positive feedback,
sure,
just in case to balance anything else that people might be hearing. Mm-hmm. And the last time I went to one of these was a year or so ago. I don't know what I'll have tomorrow, but the last time it was actually a panel of four or five of us there, and some of the women did have report some bad experiences they'd had, but two of us said we'd had nothing but good experience. My department has always been very supportive, and other people I've met have also been supportive. It's never been an issue.
Mm-hmm.
It just hasn't been an issue. All my mentors I've had in undergrad and graduate school, again, it's just never been an issue. It's never come up.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been aware that I've been treated differently.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen over the years more women coming into the program here, coming in as students? Is that growing?
I'm not sure. Again, I tend not to pay attention to those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
We have about 50% of women in the department as students.
Oh.
But I frankly don't know what the statistics are, whether that's grown, whether it's been different.
Mm-hmm.
There have always been women students around. That's never been an issue here.
Mm-hmm. But
I was in school, there were no women. Yeah. And while I'm certainly going to professional conferences, I certainly see more women than I used to.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't frankly know whether in the department whether that's the case or not.
How many women are on the faculty here?
Oh, well, now we've got, how many have we got? We've got... count. We've got some 20 faculty members, and of that we've got Dana, Jean, Nina, myself. Forgetting someone. Four women?
Mm-hmm.
Four women.
Okay. That's good. Okay, life after work. Describe your family. How do you balance work and family, and what do you do for fun and relaxation when you're not working?
My family basically now consists of my husband and my three cats. All four parents are deceased. My husband has a sister and her husband living in Virginia, but I'm an only child. And I don't have any close relatives, what family I do have are in Buffalo, still in Buffalo, but I'm not really close to them.
Mm-hmm.
So my family is basically Charles and the three cats. And we do share this love of, Charles and I, that is, share a love of opera and theater, classical theater.
Mm-hmm.
So we've, in addition to our forays out into the opera world, we go opera in Chicago, Milwaukee, and most recently we've gone to Iowa and Minneapolis for opera. Mm. So we tend to take little holidays and vacations just to opera. And also we've gotten quite interested in the American Players Theater mm-hmm. in Spring Green. So we spend a lot of time out there in the summer with the Shakespeare. We've started going to Stratford, Ontario, oh. mm-hmm. for the Shakespeare Festival. So our mm-hmm. annual summer vacation is a week in Stratford to attend plays.
Mm-hmm.
We both like to hike, mm-hmm. Mild hiking. So we vacation in Door County and hike around the coastline.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a kind of parallel universe to Door County called the Bruce Peninsula. It has the same kind of geology as Door County. It's actually a geological extension of Door County, and it's quite near Stratford. So on our way to Stratford, we spend some time in the so-called Bruce Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we do in our spare time.
Now you mentioned...
Oh, and also, I wanted something different from all that, something that Charles and I do together during this time, just starting as I was going into the university committee era, but slightly before that, sort of at the end of my IES period, I wanted something that was just for me outside of the university. And I remembered my longtime love in Japan, and also, I also remembered an experience I'd had when I was in high school, where I was a member of a theatrical group, and we had a great time putting on this. It was a production of the Mikado. I was actually the male tenor, the lead, Nanki Poo, in the Mikado. But that was a great kind of experience where I met people from all different walks of life, drawn together as part of the theater group. So I wanted something like that, wanted something where I could get exercise, and wanted, if possible, somehow that was Japanese in some way. And a friend of mine told me, once we went down to visit, actually it was Charles's friend and his wife in Chicago, and his wife, Debbie, was doing Aikido, which is a Japanese martial art. Mm-hmm. So she's telling me all about it, showing me her outfit that she wears, and oh, that sounded really neat. So I looked up, and there was an Aikido group here in Madison called Aikido of Madison. So I went, I called up, and I got the teacher, and he had a really wonderful voice, and he sounded just great, and he was so encouraging. And I said, well, you know, what about my age? I'm not real old, young. Mm-hmm. That's, well, we've got most of the groups on the younger side, but I'm such and such an age, and he's actually close to my age,
mm-hmm.
and we do have older members in the group, and why don't you come and just watch? So one day I showed up for the class, and I walked in that, it's called the dojo, which is the practice hall, and I just felt like I belonged there. I just felt such a great feeling that this was absolutely for me. And then I watched them practice, and this is wonderful. I want to be part of this. So I 11 years ago, I joined the Aikido group here in Aikido of Madison, and in some ways it saved my life. I was sort of mentally unraveling, particularly during the period of the university committee, and I had my husband was a great support, but having that Aikido group was another huge help to me,
mm-hmm.
and it's sort of almost like mental therapy as well as being good physical exercise, and it's exactly what I was looking for. It's a Japanese, it's just a wonderful supportive environment, and it's people from all walks of life. There are people mm-hmm. in there who work in factories,
mm-hmm.
who I'd never meet,
mm-hmm.
who are really interesting people.
Sure.
So I got outside the university community. As it turns out, there are a few people from the university who are also there,
mm-hmm.
but there's wide enough segment of the population that it's just a wonderful experience. So I can't say enough. And the two teachers, it's a married couple, Robin Cooper and John Stone, are the most wonderful people. they are just people who come to Aikido can sometimes be troubled. So you have to, and it is physical, so you have to kind of manage this.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a wonderful job of just managing that. And they create such a wonderful environment in the dojo that everybody behaves themselves, and it forms this tremendously strong community. It's a big tribute to these two individuals, and that's a wonderful resource we have here in Madison that I don't think a lot of people know about.
Oh.
Can't say enough good things about Robin and John and the whole community of Aikido of Madison.
Mm-hmm.
So you practice and go through these various belt stages.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm now, it's what's called a second Q in Aikido, which is, I should be, for the length of time I've spent, I should be farther along,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not very good at it. They tolerate me, and that's another thing, is that they tolerate me even though I'm not really good at it. But I'm two steps away now from black belt. And they still keep encouraging me, oh, you're going to do it. You're going to get the black belt one of these days.
How do they handle new people that come in?
Yes, well, that's interesting. The teaching there is completely different. You know, when you that's what I expected when I was going to go there. Well, they'll teach me Aikido,
uh-huh.
just like you do in a university class.
Uh-huh.
They go through a lecture. But what you do is you just get thrown in to a regular class. They do have beginner's classes,
mm-hmm.
but they're only at certain times of the year. And the time I joined, there was no beginner's class was ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
So I just got thrown in with a class, and you're just supposed to pick it up. That's the tradition in martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always, and the senior members in the class know it's their obligation to try to help the junior one, so that
mm-hmm.
they'll come up and you always work in pairs. There, it's always done as two people working together, and then one person attacks the other person, and the other person responds. If there's a really junior person in the group, one of the more senior people will always come up and be your partner to try to help you through it.
See.
And that's how you learn. But the teacher doesn't pay any particular attention, or at least seemingly doesn't.
Right.
I suppose they really are. But seemingly they're not paying any attention to the new people. They're
mm-hmm.
just teaching the class the way they always would.
So what is it, physical strength and flexibility and all of just...
No, it's not strength at all.
Oh, it isn't strength.
No, it is not strength at all.
Okay.
It's you do have to be flexible, and you have to have a certain amount of endurance,
mm-hmm.
Physical endurance.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is to use, if someone's attacking you, you use their energy to deflect their attack and to turn it against them and to bring them down without hurting them and without hurting you.
Mm.
So it and the other thing that appealed to me about it is that it has some analogies in dealing with relationships and dealing with problems
mm-hmm.
you're having at the university. So when I was going through all this at the university club committee,
right.
I thought, can I use some of these principles on these people? Because, you know, if someone's verbally or mentally trying to attack you, how can you work with that and use their energy to kind of deflect it and it's supposed to be a win-win situation. Nobody's hurt in this encounter.
Mm-hmm.
You protect yourself and you protect your partner. You're always told that when somebody's attacking you, you don't want to hurt them. You want to deflect their violence
mm-hmm.
so that they don't get hurt, but then you protect yourself. So it's very interesting, very interesting set of principles.
Like, yeah. Now I just have one other question, and then it has to do a little bit of, have you ever been to Japan?
Yes,
okay.
yes I have. I made it known to various people out there in the community that I'd love to go to Japan. I was looking for opportunities to go to Japan. And again, some mentor here stepped forward and got me an expense-paid trip to attend a conference in Japan.
Huh.
So the first time I went was in the summer of 1992. And it was in the middle of summer. It was boiling hot. It was in Kyoto. And my first night in Japan, I had this experience of This is such a comforting experience. I felt totally at home.
Hmm.
This is just a good place to be. So I spent just a couple weeks there as part of the conference. But then I went back there in 1998 as part of my sabbatical.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent almost 2 months there in the winter this time as part
mm-hmm.
of my sabbatical. And in the meantime, I managed to make some contacts with various Japanese colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1998, I was invited to a party at Kyoto University, And I was talking about my book, which had been published, and one of the men said, well, we should translate this book into Japanese. I said, okay. So I sent him a copy of the book, and a few years later or so, the book was actually received a copy translated into Japanese.
Huh.
And it's also been translated into Chinese, my second book.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to know the man who actually headed up the translation pretty well. And several of the Japanese have then come to the U.S., and they've since spent sabbaticals here, or they sent some of their colleagues to spend sabbaticals here.
Mm-hmm.
So that was back again in 2001 for another conference. And then as part of my sabbatical, just this current sabbatical, Charles and I spent about 3 weeks in Japan in December of
mm-hmm.
Last year.
Oh, great.
Visiting my various colleagues
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
So the Japanese connection was important scientifically in that the very first one of these guys who came to spend a sabbatical with me
mm-hmm.
was quite interested in heat transport using temperature measurements in groundwater work. So I got all interested in this through his because of his interest, and
mm-hmm.
he showed me led me into some of the literature on all this. And so I've recently written a research review paper on heat as a groundwater tracer.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the work we're doing now in our research in the Trout Lake Basin involves the use of temperature measurements
mm-hmm.
to provide some insight into groundwater flow systems.
I see. Mm-hmm. So, and all because of listening to opera on Saturday afternoons.
Right, right. And Marie Morisawa. Yes, yeah, exactly right.
Well, I have no more questions. Do you have anything else that you'd like to add?
Well, there's one question on here. What do you feel are your main scientific accomplishments?
Yes.
So I guess I'd like to get that in.
Oh, please do.
There were, besides the two books, the two textbooks and the editorship that I mentioned,
yeah.
I was interested to see what was cited in my election to the National Academy of Engineering. And those are some of the things that were cited, were the leadership in the development of groundwater models was what I was cited for. And the two textbooks are part of that. And interestingly enough, the editorship also is viewed as leadership in the field.
Mm-hmm.
But scientifically, I think the two things that were important was, one of the things was early on in my career, actually, just as I was getting tenure, so it would have been in the early 80s, I guess,
mm-hmm.
There was some confusion about the role of mixing processes in groundwater systems. There was a lot of attention was being paid to the movement of contaminants in the subsurface,
mm-hmm.
and there seemed to be some confusion as to the role of mixing processes. So I'd written a literature review. I was actually invited to write a literature review. Everybody cautioned me that I shouldn't do this, that writing a literature review is not a good way for an assistant professor to spend their time, that it would not be regarded very well. But I wanted to do it. I was intrigued by this, so I did it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And in the course of this literature review, I was able to pull together a lot of the ideas and clarified the current state of thinking regarding the mixing processes. A so-called dispersion
mm-hmm.
in groundwater systems. And the literature review turned out to be extremely well-known and actually was very helpful in name recognition because a lot of people got to know me through this literature review.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So it actually, a good literature review or a hard-hitting one can actually be quite helpful, I think,
mm-hmm.
to bidding for tenure. And the second thing was sort of related to that was as people started to understand this mixing processes better, they formed the opinion that it was that the way to present it in mathematical simulations was to use random distributions of geologic heterogeneities, and that you could then simulate an aquifer by a random number generator, basically, and generate a random distribution of numbers that would simulate how the geologic media look in the real world
mm-hmm.
and then simulate the movement of contaminants through it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I pointed out that this is not the way geologic deposits always look. I mean, there are some geologic deposits that are like this, that are random distributions of heterogeneities, but oftentimes there are preferential flow paths and there are orders, an ordered distribution of deposits that are a result of the geological processes that form these sediments.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I think, a big contribution to the field, and that actually set off a whole other train of thought in
mm-hmm.
a lot of researchers, and they took off in a completely different direction. So I'm proud of that, and I think I was able to a little bit contribute to the changing the course of the direction
mm-hmm.
of this research. Mm-hmm. So those are the things I would cite as my major impacts on the field.
Mm-hmm.
We've also been doing a lot in the way of groundwater lake interaction and wetlands work, and that's one of the few research groups in the world that are actually focusing on these sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this wonderful laboratory in Wisconsin mm-hmm. to look at groundwater lake studies.
Now, was that here when you came?
It was. My predecessor, Dave Stevenson,
mm-hmm.
had already established a program in which he was investigating lakes. I'm glad you brought me back to this, because
mm-hmm.
I do want to acknowledge Dave Stevenson's role in all of this,
mm-hmm.
because he was kind of my first mentor in getting me started in research,
mm-hmm.
and that he because he was moving in a different direction himself, he pushed a lot of research funding my way.
Mm-hmm.
People who would come to him and say, do you want to study this, that, and the other thing, he'd say, well, I'm not really doing that anymore. Why don't you talk to Mary?
Mm-hmm.
So he was quite helpful in just getting me established in the state
sure.
to do work in groundwater lake studies.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting career.
Yes, thank
very
you.
Very interesting.
Thank you. Thank
and
you.
Very interesting life, too.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to share this.
Well, thank you for agreeing to do this.